NGOs have the scope to be innovative. Because they can take risks that governments and big organizations can't, right? They can try new types of ways of addressing poverty or addressing inequality. And then by showcasing that it works, they can convince and bring governments on for scale up.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior research fellow from Dublin, Tara Bedi. Tara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tara is the Marie Curie Irish Research Council Research Fellow in the Economics Department at Trinity College Dublin. She's working on projects in Ethiopia, India, Malawi, Mauritania, and Nigeria. And she's earlier worked with the World Bank in the area of poverty reduction. So Tara, let's talk about the Marie Curie Irish Research Council, where you are a research fellow. Tell me about the scope of your research.
Okay. Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm working across a number of different countries. And I think, you know, to understand the scope of my research, we have to step back for a second, really to understand maybe where I get my motivation from. And I think there's two factors that motivate before I get to my research scope. The first fact is growing up in rural India. So I grew up in rural India around the work my parents do. And, you know, they worked with the rural poor in Andhra Pradesh, helping them access economic and social programs. And what I saw was that through this work, there was hope. And through hope, there was change. And that really helped me focus that I wanted to do research on fighting poverty and the barriers that people faced. I guess the second thing that's really determined my research scope is this concept of vulnerability. And I guess my own experience of vulnerability. So pretty, so, you know, about 10 years ago, I had a daughter. And unfortunately, soon after having my daughter, my husband had an accident and he was left in a minimally conscious state, right? And he's never recovered from that. But, you know, I was well-educated. I live in a country with a strong safety net. So they are providing the healthcare for him. And I have a strong community of friends and family globally who really stepped in. So that made me realize, A, I'm privileged. And that lots of women in my situation wouldn't have that. So it made me think, you know, how can we understand vulnerability better and people's resilience to overcome these shocks? So that's really, I guess, defined the scope of my research. So in terms of scope, you know, you mentioned a number of different countries, but I think the one, if it's okay with you, that I'll talk about is Malawi.
So before I come to that, you know, I love the way you said that you're working on vulnerability. And for this very large number of people who will listen to our conversation, who are young, you know, more than 74% of our viewers and listeners are under 34. Help me understand how you define vulnerability.
So, I mean, I think there's different types of vulnerability, right? And I think till you're hit with an extreme shock, it's hard to understand the extent of it, right? So I guess it's ability to have an income source. And, you know, you're vulnerable if you don't have some kind of steady income. And I think there's been research done in the States that say, like, it's often the flow of income. So if you have a steady flow, you can make plans. You can make plans for your kids. And if you don't have a steady flow and you don't know when your next paycheck is coming, it's hard to do that. So it's vulnerability that
way.
There's also vulnerability in terms of, for instance, the population we work with in Malawi. I think in the last 50 years, they've had like 19 floods, 7 droughts. And for a country that's 80% agriculture dependent and mostly smallholders, if you don't know how to plan your cropping cycle because you don't know what shock is going to hit you, that makes you vulnerable.
Fascinating. Wonderful.
I could go on, so I'm going to stop on that. But I think this vulnerability is quite vast.
It is. That's why I wanted to get your perspective. And thank you for sharing that. But, you know, as when I stopped you for a minute, I you were going to start talking about your project in Malawi, right?
Yes.
So tell me about it now.
Okay. Well, in Malawi, we work with this really innovative Irish NGO called Concern Worldwide, and we're implementing a program called the Graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Graduation program, I guess, tries to address this concept of vulnerability by targeting the poorest, giving them mentoring, which is kind of like the umami,
mm-hmm.
because it gives a caseworker who helps poor households, you know, build their confidence, mm-hmm. access programs. They give them cash transfers. So it's a variety of programs to move them out of poverty. But within that, we're focusing on whether gender transformative work helps affect women's lives. So mm-hmm. we're using this thing called a randomized controlled trial,
okay.
Where we look at whether varying the gender of the recipient of the program affects poverty outcomes like expenditure, mm-hmm. consumption, kids' education. And we look at whether providing the couple with the gender empowerment training mm-hmm. affects these outcomes. So through that, we're trying to understand, because often all these development programs target women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's, you know, different social norms in countries, and often the male is the household head. So when you're targeting women with resources, you're creating a power shift.
Correct.
And so we're trying to understand, what can you couple with these development programs mm-hmm. that help the household manage these power shifts?
Okay.
So that's what we're doing in Malawi. And I think, you know, why Malawi?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I told you about vulnerability, but like 50% of Malawi is classified as poor.
Okay.
And within that, there's unequal opportunities for women, right? So I think 83% of men are, you know, literate, only 68% of women are. But when you look at the sample we're working with,
mm-hmm.
When we did baseline data collection,
mm-hmm.
right, over 68% of women said that they can never or rarely purchase clothing for themselves
okay.
or their children with their own earned money without the permission of someone else.
Amazing.
And the majority of men say they are the main decision maker, right? So now you're targeting this household where the woman says she can't make these decisions.
Mm.
So unless you think of how you couple these programs, mm. You know, we might be, I guess, not doing harm, but we need to unpackage it further.
Understand.
And similarly, you know, in Mauritania, we're looking at a cash transfer program.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working with the Gender Innovation Lab in both projects. Mm-hmm. So Michael King, another professor in Trinity, and I are working on these two projects. And we're looking there at a similar kind of training in Malawi, but breaking it down. So, you know, looking at how do you improve communication between couples?
Mm-hmm.
And then adding a component on like power dynamics. And then adding a component, we've just developed some videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like telenovela kind of video, 6 stories that will be given at the community level. What happens when you get these messages at the community level?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're looking kind of at a vast area of stuff. I mean, you know, we're working in India too
mm-hmm.
on a lab experiment, trying to understand how couples make decisions.
Fascinating. So coming back to Malawi, can you share one or two interesting anecdotes or, you know, examples of where your interventions have actually made a big difference?
So we're just collecting, as a true economist, I would say, we're just collecting midline data. So, you know, we'll only be able to tell from an economic standpoint, you know, what the impact is. But we are doing a lot of qualitative research as well,
mm-hmm.
right? So we did qualitative research last year that went to households that had received the couples training mm-hmm. and households that didn't.
Okay.
And the stories we got back from the women who had received the couples training was that they really felt that they now could contribute to the economic decisions
mm-hmm.
and they could feel the power of making their own money and making decisions mm-hmm. with that, with their husband. It was still joint,
mm-hmm.
but that itself, you know, was a big progress. And I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, this idea of, roles and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's things that men do in the household, there's things that women, and a lot of these women, you know, they're like, they're farming, they're looking after the kids, they're looking after the elderly. Now mm-hmm. they have to do a business.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, our husbands are now helping. They're cleaning the house. They're cooking. They're washing the clothes. We have time. So I think that's interesting. I think there was a movie in Kerala about this topic, about roles and responsibilities between the male and female. So, you know, it's not limited to Malawi.
Okay.
But I think that was, you know, one of the things that struck me. Suddenly they were acting like as a unit. And, you know, they were sharing. It wasn't about her roles and responsibility. It was what vision we have for our family and how we have to work together to achieve it.
How nice. How nice. And, you know, when you start a project like this in a new country and you work in, you know, several countries, Malawi, India, Mauritania, and Nigeria, when you work in some of these countries, what are some of the challenges you face when you are doing your research?
Well, I mean, I think one of the challenges is being context specific. So I don't, you know, I tend to, my work is collaborative. I have a lot of other economists I work with, a lot of implementers. So you're one person in a big team, right? And I think it's really important that at least one researcher has a strong understanding of the context we're speaking about. So for instance, in Malawi, I think I've spent loads of time there, you know, in small villages, small towns, and it's trying to understand the context because there's certain things that cross borders, but, you know, it's very context specific. So I think the challenge is understanding that. Then the other thing is similarly, you know, a program works in country A. So you're like, okay, we're going to implement it in B. But I think the challenge is you have to pilot and understand how to make that. What are the protocols that work in country B? Because otherwise you're just not going to get, you know, to that end result.
When I was reading about you, you know, the Leading Edge 2020 at Trocare, tell me about the work you're doing here.
Well, it was a while ago. It was 10 years ago. And what we designed was kind of a qualitative project. So, you know, I'm an economist. Most of my work is quant. And this was before I went back to do my PhD. But we interviewed over 80 thinkers, you know, across government, across big organizations, across small local organizations, to understand, you know, what are the challenges development practitioners are going to face, and what should they do to lead the way? So I think within that, right, the topics that came out, you know, like climate change, shifting geopolitics, demographics, were in the media. It's not, you know, anything new that we did, right? But I think what's interesting is in the last 10 years, these things are front and center now. But I guess what we highlighted is what can NGOs do? Because there's such amazing NGOs globally working, like BRAC in Bangladesh, SAVE in India, right? Like there's, and one of the things, one of the points I think which really linked to my current work is NGOs have the scope to be innovative. Because they can take risks that governments and big organizations can't, right? They can try new types of ways of addressing poverty or addressing inequality. And then by showcasing that it works, they can convince and bring governments on for scale up. So I think that's the point I really like from that, because it's then linked to my current agenda.
Fair enough. So, you know, over the last couple of years, I've spoken to a lot of women who are doing, you know, work like you are doing in India and in other countries. And a question I often ask them is on gender diversity. You know, you're doing a lot of work in Malawi with women trying to just make sure that men start to understand their role in a family unit, etc. I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on, and you're living in a developed country, but in the work that you're doing is in a lot of developing countries. What are your thoughts on the develop on gender diversity? Because even in a country like India, where laws exist, when I speak to women leaders, they all say that a lot of work needs to be done. So what are your thoughts on diversity, and what do you think can be done to improve this?
Well, I mean, first, I think, let me step back a little bit, right? So again, coming back to like my experience of growing up with my parents' work, a lot of their work was about realizing rights.
Correct.
So a lot of laws exist, but are the laws enforced? Mm. Are they upheld? Mm. And so my father really worked on protecting the rights of the poor and helping them realize it.
Okay.
So I think there could be a lot of laws, but if they're not actually upheld in courts or understood or, you know, information, women might not even have access to information. So my thoughts are, you know, we need to inform people what their rights are, but also help mechanisms in which they can access them. That's one thing. I mean, the second thing is we're not just bringing men along. I think we're bringing the couple along.
Correct.
Right? Because women also hold ideas, men hold ideas, and suddenly you're creating new communication skills for how they can understand their roles together and independently, right? Because we have independent roles, but we also have joint roles. And, you know, we're all brought up with a different way of like financial management, how you deal with conflicts. So I think on gender diversity, there's so much work to do, even in a developed country in Ireland, because there's a lot of bridges to be done. But I think fundamentally information access,
right,
helping them access these laws and rights, upholding them. So there is a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely right. Well said. So Tara, let's move to the last segment of our conversation. And here's some questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that as you've done so much, you've had a personal tragedy also, and you fought everything, and you're doing some amazing work. As you look back and see, what would you say are three key milestones or three key pivot points in your life or your career?
Okay. So having a daughter, right? Because suddenly you have somebody who's so vulnerable, and you're responsible for them, and you've got no PhD on it, you've got no training, and you have to help them navigate and give them opportunities.
Correct.
So they have even more opportunities than you did, right? The second thing, unfortunately, is tragedy, right? So my husband's accident, and where he was left in a state where he had no choices. And it made me realize how privileged I am. I have choice, and I have the mental ability to make the most of that choice. And I guess the third thing is doing a PhD, right? Because most economic PhDs, they're in their mid-20s, they've come straight for the master's. Well, I went back in my mid-30s. I hadn't touched maths in years. So, to be able to go back and do something, challenge yourself. And it's not financially paid at all. So I think being able to do that and come out of it was a big milestone as well.
Terrific. My next question is that as a person who's doing so much research, and interacting with so many different communities, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Okay. Kindness. I think we have to be kind to others and kind to ourselves, because we don't know what tragedy, what baggage they've come with. And I think in being kind, it helps us all. I think honesty, as much as we can.
Okay.
Including to ourselves, because often we're not honest with ourselves about taking on too much or, being uncomfortable. And if we're honest with ourselves, we might make different choices that help us. I don't know if family can be said as a core value. Family and friends, right? Because I think your biggest asset are the relationships you invest in.
Correct.
And I think, you know, the support you get from them and you can give to them, I think it can catch you at the worst times and propel you forward. So those are some.
Very nice. Very nice. My next question is that from where you stand today, what does success mean to Tara?
Where I stand today is very different to where I stood like 10 years ago, right?
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, one thing about success is being able to do something that's just not for yourself. Being able to be considerate of others and to think of others, that's success, right? Because you have that luxury to do it.
Okay.
I think success is time. Having time to read a book, to see family, especially after COVID, you know, to be able to hug family. Success is having that luxury. And I think the final thing of success is not to be stressed about where you pay your next bill. How are you going to manage? And okay, now the final is success is to know that your children or the ones you love have more opportunities than you have yourself.
Very well said. Wonderful. And a follow-up question from success is who or what inspires you?
Okay. Well, I think I've been giving hints, right?
Yep.
My parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dad is a chemical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a very like stable, well-settled life in California.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I'm going back to India. I'm going to set up an NGO in rural India. You know, mom had never been there.
Okay.
So I think, you know, that ability to jump and help others.
Mm.
And they're 81, right? And they're still doing things to help those around them. And they're still trying to make positive change. So I think that inspires me, because if I'm doing that at that their age, then I think I've been successful.
Fantastic. And Tara, my last question to you now is a question on failure. And I've often said this, that parents in Asia don't necessarily teach their children it's okay to fail. And I know as a parent, and I know as with so many other parents, we're always being taught come first in class, go to the head of the line, etc., etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. Yet we fail, we learn. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I think my biggest mistake sometimes is spreading myself too thin, right? You want to do a good job in everything.
Sure.
So you're trying to hold up everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the ball falls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that you were doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where that honesty comes in. What are you capable of? And that you can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to admit it. And, you know, there was that big book, Lean In. You need to lean out a bit. You need to understand what you can do, what you can commit,
mm-hmm.
and that it's okay to say no.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's my biggest learning. I'm still working at it.
Yep. I agree. Tara, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for taking me through the incredible journey you've had. And I'm sure, you know, there's many, many interesting things to look forward to. Thank you so much and good luck.
Not at all. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And it was really interesting chatting with you and thinking about all these things.
Thank you again. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.